Eric Roberts is a fucking man. He's the greatest fucking actor since acting began. We should give him every medal, every trophy and award. He's the greatest fucking actor that you've ever seen or ever heard.
Eric Roberts, fucking man. Eric Roberts, the fucking man.
Eric Roberts is the fucking man. Eric Roberts is the fucking man. Eric Roberts is the fucking man. If there's anything that you can do, Eric Roberts fucking can.
You can't be neutral on a moving train. It's Eric Roberts is the fucking man Redux, the world's most beloved Eric Roberts-related podcast. I'm Doug Tilley, and joining me as usual is the traveler from beyond time, Liam O'Donnell. How are you doing today, Liam?
I'm traveling beyond time.
Liam, if you had a time-traveling device, what era would you like to travel to? Yeah, just give us some dead air right at the beginning.
No. That's a good question because I don't think, I mean.
Because sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you are a person, you have a dusky exterior.
Trying to get canceled again.
There might be some times in history where it wouldn't be so comfortable for you.
I mean, my inclination would be to go to the future because that's just the thing I want to know is what the future is going to be like. Yeah. Assuming I had to go to the past, I'd probably go, weirdly enough, to the early 80s, which is maybe a bad thing because I was alive. But there's a bunch of bands that I couldn't have seen when I was like two or three that I could go back and see. So that seems kind of cool.
And I mean, you're like, oh man, I wish we had Reagan back.
Yeah, I can't wait for some Reagan.
You might experience that whole thing again. So what are these bands? What are these early 80s bands?
Oh, I'd like to see like Bad Brains Live. I'd like to see Black Flag Live. I'd like to see, actually, you know what? Old Depeche Mode. Yeah, that would be cool to see live.
Would be cool. I wasn't thinking about that, but that
would actually be pretty cool. Yeah. Or like even like early Devo, like back when people were getting, so that would be actually later 70s maybe. Maybe I should just pick 77 and go from there.
Liam, if you were traveling through time, would you take your wife and daughter with you?
No, too dangerous.
Why is that?
Just because I don't know what's going to happen back there.
Back where? 1981?
Yeah, man.
Shut up, Liam. Our guest today is a writer, historian, and podcaster. It's our good friend Chad Denton. How are you doing today, Chad?
Oh, I'm doing great. Hello, everybody.
Chad, would you like to travel through time? Is that something you'd be interested in doing?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
How about through time and relative dimensions in space? That's a reference to Doctor Who, the character that we're going to be getting into on this episode of Eric Roberts is the fucking man. But I got to ask you, right before we get into Doctor Who, we need to get into Eric Roberts himself, Chad. What is your life history with Eric? I almost said your name. What's your life history with Eric Roberts, the actor?
Well, I was always a fan of his. I actually remember that when I was a teenager, I became obsessed with a movie he was in, which was Malice or something like that.
Now, is this the one with Richard Gere? Is that the movie? Who else is in this movie that you're talking about? I should know. I'm an Eric Roberts expert. I need more information.
I know. I should have been better prepared for that.
No, you're doing fine. You were probably right. It's definitely not called Malice.
Okay. I think I've made the same mistake with you before because my memories are so muddled. But anyway, moving on from that, I saw the Doctor Who movie was actually my first introduction to the franchise. So I saw Eric Roberts in that. And as someone who's been a connoisseur of B-movies for a very long time, Eric Roberts would appear in quite a few films that I've seen, usually in a secondary role, but so no other movies are standing out except the one that I think I misremember him being in, unfortunately. But I guess that happens with Eric Roberts because he's been in so many films over the years.
Chad, sometimes I want Eric Roberts to be in a movie so badly, I just pretend that he's in there. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. I think he should be in more films, and I am insatiably curious about what caused his falling out with his sister. I don't know if
that... No, everything is fine. Haven't you read every interview with them for the past decade?
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, we'll probably be finding out a lot more details about that because of something I'm going to announce in just a little bit. But before I announce anything at all, Chad, you're here for a lot of different reasons. But one of those reasons is because you have a history with Doctor Who. You mentioned that you had seen the Eric Roberts Doctor Who TV movie. That's what how everyone refers to it, the Eric Roberts Doctor Who TV movie from 1996. And, like, what has been your history with Doctor Who as a property?
Well, I think my first introduction was through my local PBS station, which, of course, showed basically Are You Being Served seemingly 50% of the time.
Yeah.
But one weekend afternoon, I don't even remember what age I was. I was probably, like, 12 or something. And I saw... an episode with Sylvester McCoy's Doctor, and it was very weird and confusing, and it was actually later I found out that it is considered one of the more confusing episodes of Doctor Who, because it was when the show was on a shoestring budget. It was the episode where the Doctor and Ace go into a Victorian mansion that she thought was haunted, so the Doctor takes her back in time to 100 years ago, when the house was still inhabited, and of course, alien shenanigans.
That episode.
Yeah. But it was like the Eighth Doctor era. It was completely unlike Star Wars or Star Trek, which of course were the two big sci-fi properties I was familiar with. It was just so different that I was fascinated by it. And then I caught the movie when it first aired, actually. I think I was there for the premiere. But then I kind of lost track of it, and then the new series aired, and I finally started watching again when David Tennant was there. And of course, I just was hooked from that point on. I went back to the classic series, and don't feel bad, Doug, because there's still like a lot of Fifth Doctor episodes I haven't seen yet, but I'm working my way through. But I watched like a lot of the classic series. But to this point, the Doctor that I first encountered, Sylvester McCoy's Doctor, is still my favorite. And I still love those episodes because they're very strange. And they did an adaptation of the, and of course, because I'm on a podcast and recording, I'm blanking out on all sorts of details. But the guy who wrote Crash.
Paul, the shitty Crash or the good Crash?
The good Crash.
Of course, we're talking about J.G. Ballard.
J.D. Ballard, yes. They actually did a very loose adaptation of one of his novels for that era of the show. So it probably influenced me in ways that I don't even understand. It's his novel that's about people trapped in a high-rise building who basically regress into a more primitive form of society because they become isolated from everyone else.
Didn't they also adapt that a few years back with Tom Hiddleston? Am I wrong on that? Am I thinking of something else?
Nope.
Yeah, they did.
Nope, that's one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a Doctor Who episode that's loosely based on that.
It's funny, you know, I had a very similar kind of first experience with Doctor Who in that I had a PBS station that also played episodes, but I never watched it because it looked very old-fashioned to me, even in like the early 90s or whenever. And they also used to play episodes on YTV here in Canada, which is sort of our equivalent to Nickelodeon. It was a children's television station. Yes, Liam?
You never watched it?
I never watched Doctor Who?
Yeah, I mean, when you would see it just on TV.
No, never. I mean, I probably watched maybe 5-10 minutes here and there throughout my entire childhood, but no, it didn't attract me in any way because, like I said, it looked like, because of how those, particularly the 70s episodes, which is, it seemed like they only showed color episodes on YTV or PBS, they always seemed old-fashioned. I'd be like, I couldn't possibly enjoy that. Just like they used to show episodes of Blake 7 as well.
How old were you?
I probably was 11, 12 years old.
Okay. For me, I would watch it because it looked old. I didn't watch a ton of it. I did watch it. And part of what was so compelling, this is what I was going to say to you, Doug, you didn't find that theme song fucking addictive. If I turned on PBS and that song was on, I'd be like, oh my God. Like, fully knowing that the show was not actually the most exciting thing ever, I was convinced as a kid something exciting was going to happen because that music was so exciting.
I actually think I found it more unnerving than exciting.
I love it. I was so stoked on it. Now, granted, I was too young to remember anything other than scarfs and Daleks. In fact,
right.
years later, when I had not watched Doctor Who in a long time, and I found out there was an indie hip-hop group named Dalek, I thought, ooh, they must be about dark, awful things, because Daleks imprinted on me as the scariest shit possible. Like, there was nothing scarier to childhood me. And on the idea of it looking old, I used to watch reruns of Dark Shadows, and that was like the most boring show ever. But as a kid, I was convinced it was like the best.
Well, I mean, that covers, I think, our experience with Doctor Who generally. I have watched the movie from 1996, which we actually covered on an early episode of Eric Roberts Is the Fucking Man, but because that was pre Liam O'Donnell as a co-host, he has not seen it before.
Nope.
And the reason we're talking about Doctor Who generally, by the way, is that we are going to talk about Eric Roberts, who played the Master in that 1996 series, his return to Doctor Who as a franchise through the Big Finish audio productions that have been coming out over the last few years, and specifically his big return with Master. But before we got to get to that, we need to get to all the latest Eric Roberts news on The Roberts Report. It's the Roberts Report for this episode of Eric Roberts Is the Fucking Man Redux. You can follow Eric Roberts on Twitter at Eric Roberts, all one word, and I think that you should. But I'm going to open things up on this episode, Liam. You should also follow Eric Roberts on Instagram at Eric Roberts Actor, all one word. And you got to get on that train right now because things are moving very fast. We've got some breaking news to kick off this episode's Roberts Report. It is, this is from people.com, Eric Roberts to pen revealing new memoir about his life. Ooh. We have a cover for the upcoming Eric Roberts memoir written by Eric Roberts with Sam Kashner. It's called, kind of surprisingly, Liam, Runaway Train or The Story of My Life So Far. This was announced on January 24th by Eric Roberts himself. He said, "It's no longer a secret. I have a new memoir coming this September entitled Runaway Train, co-written with Sam Kashner. In it, I get very personal talking about my career in theater and film, my sometimes rocky relationship with my family, and my struggles with addiction." Take a look at the article below to see my book's exclusive cover, which we have, the cover. I want to start with our guest today, Chad. What do you think about this cover? What do you think about the title? What do you think about this memoir?
I will definitely read it. I look forward to Yeah, I kind of hope that he talks about his film roles more than his personal life, but I'm interested in that as well.
You hoping he gets into detail on the Human Centipede 2?
Yes.
Three it is.
Yes.
Sorry, Human Centipede 3. Let me correct myself.
Yes, and a talking cat. And
Are you surprised, Chad, as I was, that this memoir is not called Eric Roberts Is the Fucking Man? Do you think that they were worried that they have to pay us royalties?
Yeah, I think that's the most likely explanation, but I do hope that you're cited in the memoir.
Liam, when this was announced, I got messaged by a dozen different people
of
who
course,
were all
of course.
Asking me questions about this. And one of the things that they all said was what Chad just referred to. Do you think we'll be mentioned in Eric Roberts' memoir? Liam, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being a total certainty and 1 being absolutely never in a million years, where do we fit in terms of perhaps being mentioned in his memoir?
4.5.
I'll put ourselves a little bit lower at 3. Sam Kashner, I've done a little research on him. He's a legitimate author. He's written actual biographies of actual celebrities, which of course he would because he is working with Eric Roberts here. But it's possible he will not dive into the Eric Roberts Is the Fucking Man archives, no matter how much I think that he should. Liam, are you excited about this book?
Yeah, I actually am.
Why? What do you want to know about that we don't already know about Eric Roberts? His relationship with his famous daughter and sister?
I mean, yeah, I wonder if maybe I'm in the opposite boat of I actually want a lot of his personal life in the book because I don't know anything about it. Like, whatever he has to say about these movies, they're not going to justify most of the movies for me. So I really just wanted to know what was going on in his life more than I just needed to hear stories about the movies.
Well, it's funny because I do live somewhere in the midst of those two sides where I most want to know about the movies, but I also feel like a lot of his most famous movies, he's talked about a lot, including to us, Liam, on stage in Chicago. While when it comes to his personal life, I just don't have a lot of direct interest outside of maybe his messiest period, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s when he was a little out of control. But I feel like these memoirs sometimes lean a little heavier into the most controversial stuff. I want to know it all. And we can find out all of it when this book is released on September 17th, 2024. Liam, that's just a few days before my birthday.
Whoa.
I know.
I'm not going to buy it for you, though.
Why is that? Why wouldn't you gift me with the story of Eric Roberts?
I don't want to encourage you.
Encourage me to cover the life and work of actor Eric Roberts? You know, Liam, we did make a blood oath to cover it. And by the way, the text of that, we to cover the life and work, that's the reason that we have to cover an audio play of Doctor Who featuring Eric Roberts. It doesn't say the life and movies. It's the life and work of actor Eric Roberts.
Cool.
Oh, I have to admit something. I didn't know that Eric Roberts' daughter was also an actor. Who is she?
Emma Roberts, a very famous actress, my understanding is. Now, I have to be honest as well, Chad, since we're sharing honesty with each other. I don't care about Emma Roberts. I mean, God bless her. I'm sure she's a very talented actress. I've seen her in a few things, including that romantic comedy about pizza with the kid from the Star Wars movies. What was that one called? Little Italy, I think is what it was called. But yeah, she's. I think you could make a case that she's actually more famous than her famous father. Yet I have not seen her in much because I do not have my ear to the ground, Chad.
You know, is she in American Horror Story? Is it that actress?
I think she was in that. I think she's in one of the Scream movies. Is that right, Liam?
Yeah, she is in. Wait, is it Scream 4?
Boy, I do not know.
She was on that show. She was on that Scream Queens show.
Oh, okay. Back on December 30th, this is going to be a fruitful conversation. Eric Roberts said on Twitter, SSRIs are crap. There's a lot to feel sad about in this world. A pill isn't going to pay your bills. Bring a loved one back. Create world peace. Stop hate or cruelty. But those pills sure do cause other problems. And then we're told those pills are the solution. Just another con job, says Eric Roberts. Liam, let's start with you. What do you think about that?
Don't love it.
Why?
I don't. I think he's trying to be helpful, and I've heard other boomers of his type make these sorts of claims. And my issue is that you can't pull yourself by your bootstraps out of depression. I just don't think that's a realistic expectation, and I think it shames people who are just doing what they can to try to feel better, and it bums me out, you know. And I get it to some extent too, because having been through some, you know, having dealt with his own versions of addiction, you know what I mean? I was about to say having been through recovery, but my man loves the weed, so it's not like he's sober.
But he loves it so much he went to therapy for it.
I mean, but he also did it, Doug, which he revealed to us.
Yes.
I get it that, like, it's hard to look at that for some folks who don't understand what's going on there and just assume folks are just getting addicted to something different. But I think you need to just admit that some people's experiences can't be explained by tragedy. It's not, people don't go on SSRIs because they just had a bad thing happen to them and now they need, you know what I mean? Like, there are other issues going on. It's not just, oh, my life is hard right now, I'm going to take this. That's not how it actually works, but I think he's coming at it with this, frankly, outdated old person mindset that's not really helpful.
Like, he's posting this on December 30th, 2023. It's like, I need to end this year on a controversial note, to say the least. Chad, we got one side of this perspective from Liam just then. Do you agree or disagree that SSRIs are just another con job?
Oh, geez. There's an interesting book about that called Lost Connections, which I actually read for my job writing study guides. And speaking as someone who did use SSRIs off and on for a good part of my adult life, like, I respect the perspective that they may not be as effective as some people believe, that they may have unfortunate side effects like weight gain and sexual issues. Like, I haven't made myself super familiar with the argument, and I am in no way a medical expert at all.
Not like Eric Roberts is.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, so like, I haven't dived into the medical journals to see what the... So So, like, I tried to be open to some of those arguments, and I have more respect for them than I do for certain other medical arguments that are currently going around right now. But at the same time, I don't think totalizing statements like that are very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, look, it is a controversial subject. I don't think we should dive into these controversial subjects on Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. But I do want to just get both of your take. Liam, when does life begin?
I'm not playing this game.
Chad, rebuttal? Back on November 8th. Oh, sorry, please.
Oh, no, I was just going to say conception, of course.
I think a couple of days before conception. Back on November 8th, 2023, there was a very strange tweet made by Eric Roberts on Twitter. And a lot of people messaged me at the time, and I want to get everyone's take on this. He's responding to the director, Jason Reitman, who was posting the trailer for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, his upcoming Ghostbusters sequel. Jason Reitman wrote, it'll send a chill down your spine. Watch the teaser trailer for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire coming soon exclusively to movie theaters. And Eric Roberts quote tweeted it and said, "Too bad you're so mean. You sure make good movies." Sticking with you, Chad, what could he possibly have meant by that?
I'm just assuming they had like one bad run-in and he hasn't let it go. But I have to admit, though, that I could see myself doing something like that if I was in that situation. So I have to say that that's very relatable.
Specifically to Jason Reitman?
Specifically to any famous person.
That's why Liam keeps quote tweeting Larry Cohen well after his death, just really shoving it to him.
Yeah, I keep Liam going, "Hey guys, remember when this dude was alive?"
You're like, "He's a good director. Why has he got to be so mean?" What do you think's going on here, Liam?
This is so messy, Doug.
I know.
And it just makes me think, first of all, I'm confused because we've been working under the impression that Eliza runs the fucking social media for a long time.
I think at the very least she has a large influence on what is posted on his social media, 100%.
She didn't approve this, right? Like, there's no way.
Maybe she's the one who had the negative run-in. Maybe she went in
True.
Right, maybe she went in for an audition for Juno, and it didn't go well. Could be.
But was Eric ever in any of his movies?
Not to my knowledge, right? And Jason Reitman, look, I'm not a huge Jason Reitman fan as a director. I think most of his stuff is pretty middling, but he seems to be really liked within Hollywood. You know, he brings back those celebrities together for like the all-star script readings and stuff like that. He seems pretty well liked. I just wonder when he got on Eric Roberts' bad side, because Eric Roberts isn't the kind of guy to air that laundry in public on his Twitter feed, Liam. So I'm excited to find out how far this, and this could also be a joke, by the way. This could 100% just be, "You're so mean, ha ha ha," but just a weird statement on Twitter, and I love it. I love it so much, Liam.
I mean, I think if it is a joke, that's still weird, right? Like, if I'm Jason Reitman, I'm going, "What is Eric doing right now? He's going to make people think I'm an asshole."
I know. I was actually thinking the same thing because I really like Eric Roberts, and now I'm regretting making that joke about a talking cat. I know, Eric, if you're listening to this, I know you've done better things. I was just making a joke. I saw you in Dark Knight. I thought you were great. Yeah. I love you, Eric.
Oh, you're already too late, man. That SSRI comment has already got us off of the radar of Eric Roberts at this point.
No.
Back on October 29th, Eric Roberts, this is also very strange, he wrote on Twitter, "I think we have to take a break from making movies like Freelance. It's a good movie. Good people made it. But in this world of mass shootings, on-set accidents, war and enemy assigning, unemployment and pain, it just doesn't sit right to watch people savagely gun each other down while giggling and live streaming on a cell phone. Enough. There are other things to create movies about. Everyone was once a baby and a child. It's pain that led them to later inflict pain." Now, I don't know about the two of you, but I forgot that there was a movie called Freelance that came out. Apparently, he's talking about the John Cena, Alison Brie action comedy that came out in 2023. That was immediately forgotten by every single person in the entire world. Liam, I'm going to stick with you for a second. What's going on in Eric Roberts' head?
Does he just... I haven't seen Freelance, Doug.
Nope.
I do know that it's not about mass shootings per se, right? Like, it's not about it's not like a school shooting movie or something, right? And in a Hollywood in which there are constantly movies about violence, right? Like, this is why Freelance. Like, I don't know why Freelance.
That one in particular, I don't.
Is the movie that he's like, we've crossed the Rubicon. We've gone too far. I don't know why one of the main actors in Human Centipede 3 thinks that Freelance is the movie in which we've crossed over the decency line. I just don't. I mean, again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it turns out Freelance is some real, you know, raw shit. But my vibe right now, Doug, is like, I don't know what Eric Roberts is talking about, and it's weird.
I guess I could see, you know, maybe he or whoever wrote this was watching the news that day and just saw, like, endless violence and, you know, shootings and things like that. And then to then sit down and watch a movie where violence is treated rather trivially, and it's like it's not treated as serious at all, it probably just rubbed them the wrong way. But that's a really strange movie to target. What do you think, Chad? What do you think was the B in Eric Roberts' bonnet that day?
Yeah, I don't know. Because one of my personal theses about American culture in the 21st century is that movies are actually on the whole less violent than they were in the 90s. Mm. Because I just remember, like, action movies having tons of innocent people getting gunned down brutally in the films that I grew up with, and that doesn't seem to happen as much anymore. Maybe I just don't watch as many unironic action movies anymore. But anyway, I could see that being something a person from a certain of a certain age set would say. I'm not sure if it really holds up. I definitely don't agree with it, but I haven't seen Freelance, so who knows? It might be like an orgy of ultra violence, but I kind of doubt it.
And let us not forget that Eric Roberts appears in his share of action movies and has many coming up in the future as well. Just seems like an odd thing to target. But speaking of odd things to target, and this is not something that I've shared with either of you, from 6 days ago on his Instagram, Eric Roberts tweeted a photo of some upcoming films, things that specifically what was coming out on February 26, 2024, which just has an image, this must be from the Internet Movie Database, of three horror movies that were coming out, all from the same director, obviously. One was called The Vengeance of Dracula, one's called The Reincarnation of Dracula, and one of them is The Resurrection of Frankenstein. These are probably ultra-low, like, micro-budget horror films, all with, like, the same cast and stuff. And Eric Roberts decided to put this photo on his Instagram and say, "What's happening with us in the world? I bet if you saw the listing for movies opening on a Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday 10 years ago, or even 7, or even 3, or 5, you'd see a variety of romantic comedies, romantic dramas, meaningful films, incredibly intelligent films, beautiful creations, fun, uplifting things you could barely wait to see. To see horror and nothing but week after week, we need to do something about us. Movies reflect life, and life mirrors movies. Starting with kindness, we all need to do everything we can to create a life worth living, safe and filled with a good amount of joy for everyone." So knowing that neither of you can see the image of what I was talking about, though I think I described it pretty well.
I mean, I'm looking at it right now.
What's Liam, since you're looking at it, what's that all about?
I don't understand where this image is from, Doug.
It must be from, like, some IMDb listing of upcoming movies, but, like, that movie didn't go to none of those movies are coming to theaters. That's just, like, ultra, like, that's shit that shows up on Tubi every week, which, again, look, don't get me wrong, and as Chad already mentioned, I think we all here appreciate B-level horror movies and stuff like that, but, like, that's, that is not influential on the culture. Those are not the movies that he's talking about that you used to see in theaters. He's right, there's not as much variety that's coming into the theaters each week, but in terms of using this as a example, is those are the kind of movies he's in. what's he talking about? Chad, any thoughts?
Yeah.
Any thoughts? Do you agree, by the way? Do we need more of a mix instead of these I guess negative horror movies that we're getting in theaters nonstop?
Yeah, I do, but I think that's a weird complaint because, I mean, I think there's still been a fair amount of horror movies because they're cheaply made and
they tend to be profitable. Pretty much,
yeah, they tend to be profitable. You pretty much have a guaranteed audience with adolescents and teens, but that's been true since the back when I was alive before Constantinople fell. So See, I could see where he's coming from if he was talking about superhero movies. And sure. I say that as somebody who actually will defend several MCU movies, more than several, to be honest. Oh, so, yeah, it's a strange complaint. I know, right?
But, I mean, look, his bigger point is well made, which is that there just isn't as much variety and hasn't been for the last... Probably. It's funny that he says, like, last 3 and then 5 years. Like, he puts 5 after 3. Anyway, that there isn't as much variety as there should be in movie theaters. But the fact is, like, that's a problem with Hollywood, right? In that they don't make mid-budget movies for the most part anymore. They're all huge blockbusters, so there's less of them. But, like, that's the example he should be using. Why did he pick out this fucking person and his 3 movies that are all coming out on the same day? Maybe he's just thinking that there's, like, a glut of low-budget horror. But, I mean... this, I think, would have more resonance coming from someone who doesn't star in dozens of these low-budget horror movies every year.
Now, someone who's been in and correct me if I'm wrong, since you're the Eric Roberts expert, but he's been in a fair amount of horror movies, too. Right?
More than his fair share, I would say, Chad. Yeah. And by that, I say hundreds at this point, including some very good ones and including a lot of maybe movies that, without seeing the ones that he's talking about here, that would be on the level of it. Just a bit of an odd statement to be made. But like I said, if you want to get the controversial takes, now these days you got to go over to Eric Roberts' Instagram feed. But if you want to get the inside dirt, you got to come right here at Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. Over at usmagazine.com, we have an article that's called "The Private Eyes Eric Roberts is Convinced His Fish Can Recognize His Singing Voice." So The Private Eye was a film starring... beloved comedian Matt Rife, which came out recently. I bet the people involved with the movie were so happy when all that shit went down with Matt Rife recently. That completely fucked his career.
Oh my anyway, God.
So Eric Roberts, I don't know if you've seen the poster for this, Liam. It's just Matt Rife's face melding into Eric Roberts' face. It's like some sort of weird dream of mine. But this is a movie called The Private Eye. I'm sure we'll cover it at some point in the future because we made a blood oath. But this is from an interview surrounding that. Asking Eric Roberts about 25 things you don't know about him. And one of those things is that each morning and evening, he shuffles around the yard and lays out food for the neighborhood cats and the raccoons that have taken residence nearby. As we know, that Eric Roberts is, of course, an animal lover. And he says that aquatic animals know to come for food when they hear me. Basically, a modern-day Dr. Doolittle. Chad, what do you think? Eric Roberts and the fish.
Oh, I think that's wonderful, especially with, I'm a cat lover, so yeah, it's good to see that he does that. And and can I also just say, though, that of all the kooky things that you've been talking about, I'm just actually relieved that compared to certain other celebrities his age, Eric Roberts is still, like, He still comes across as way more sane than some of his contemporaries at the moment, since we live in an era of social media literally driving famous people insane. I'm glad to see that hasn't. I would say that he's still on a good trajectory for now, at least.
Well, we'll see if you still feel the same after I read out all 25 of these facts that we have about Eric Roberts from this article. I'm not, of course. I do want to get Liam's take. Liam, Eric Roberts sings to the fishes. Does that jive with everything we know about Eric Roberts up to this point?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Doug. Didn't he make some sort of, like, thing for the squirrels in his yard? Wasn't that a thing?
He did build a squirrel sanctuary, according to Eric Roberts, that was in his backyard of his house. Maybe we saw that on either one of the various ghost hunting shows that was involving him, or probably his wife swap episode.
Yeah, I think at this point, he has a weird relationship with animals who I'm not sure actually care about him, but that's okay. I mean, he also has really great cats, so there you go. It is what it is.
This article does have 25 things that Eric Roberts has come up with himself, interesting things about himself. Some of them aren't that interesting, but some of them are. Like, he says that he is a great, almost pro-level swimmer, according to number 5 on this list. He says he's a little afraid of flying, despite that he flies around 10,000 miles a month, which we know because he yells at airlines a lot on Twitter. I have a long list of favorite actors, including John Cusack, Joan Cusack, the Private Eye co-star Matt Rife, Paul Rudd, Brent David Fraser, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. What do you think about that, Liam? His favorite actors?
weird. That's weird.
That's a weird list.
Yeah.
I mean, I love John and Joan Cusack, but what a strange one. I don't know if he's ever worked with John Cusack before. And Paul Rudd on the list, even though Paul Rudd, of course, stars in his most despised director's upcoming Ghostbusters. But yes, this is a very, lots of interesting stuff on here. I never met a cookie I didn't like. I love pizza, especially with fresh tomatoes. I start each day with green tea. Lots of great stuff. And he had apparently some trouble putting 25 things on this list. Over at yahoo.com, they mention that Coming Soon is pleased to debut the Snow White and the Seven Samurai trailer for the Asylum's latest release. The film stars mixed martial arts legend and former UFC light heavyweight champion Quentin Rampage Jackson, who's joined by Eric Roberts and Gina Vittori. I had both of you watch the trailer for Snow White and the Seven Samurai from the beloved The Asylum production office. Starting with you, Chad, what did you think of this trailer?
Yeah, I just wish it had more Eric Roberts, but I kind
he does of appear, but no speaking. But Eric Roberts does appear very briefly in this trailer.
I would have preferred if the Seven Samurai were hot guys instead of hot women, because I want more male gaze for gay men in movies, especially in 2024. But that's my main complaint. I kind of adored the premise, and I probably will watch it, even though it's probably not going to be very good.
Left for dead by her rich and powerful stepmother, Snow White is taken in by a team of assassins, the Seven Samurai, who train her in the ways of fighting, reads the synopsis. As her stepmother becomes more and more powerful, Snow White and the Samurai take up arms to topple her once and for all. Liam, what did you think of the trailer?
I mean, I don't even think this is a good idea for a skit, let alone a movie.
Really? Aww.
I mean, this feels like a movie that's trying to be sold on its title, certainly. Though there's nothing wrong with that. And it does have Quentin Rampage Jackson, UFC legend. Liam, what do you think about that?
Oh, I've always been a fan of Quentin Rampage Jackson.
Oh, you're doing that thing where you're pretending like, oh, who is this person? This famous UFC fighter? Mm-hmm. Now, what'd you think of the trailer? You think it could be a fun movie?
No.
It looked like it had kind of a John Wick thing. I mean, obviously, it's the Asylum, so it's going to be bad. But it looked like the action could be fun.
No.
Nope. Liam is a big no on Snow White and the Seven Samurai. Well, I believe it's actually available already, because as of the time we're recording this, it's open. Actually, it's playing theatrically.
What?
Yeah, in California, it's several. They have to get it into the theaters for a short run, so it'll be available to win an Oscar next year.
Right.
but if you are in Roswell, Georgia, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Miami Beach, Florida, or Encina, California, or Brunswick, Ohio, you could be seeing Snow White and the Seven Samurai in a local cinema right now today. And I think that you probably should. If you do see it, why don't you report back what did you think of it? Speaking of what do we think of things? Yeah, please.
I was just going to say, I will say that from the brief clip I saw, the action did look surprisingly competent for the Asylum.
I thought so.
But that might turn out to be like the only really real action scene in the whole movie if the Asylum hasn't changed their usual tactics. So,
recently added to the ever-expanding Eric Roberts filmography is the 2024 comedy Santa's Cousin, directed by Ross Kagan Marx, and featuring Eric Roberts as Santa Claus, described as Santa Claus sends his reluctant cousin Colton on a mission to bring holiday cheer to a small New Mexico town in jeopardy, also featuring Eliza Roberts as Mrs. Claus. And we have the whole cast full of people I do not recognize, but that's okay. Liam, we always need more Eric Roberts-themed Christmas movies because we need to watch them in the Christmas season or the holiday season. What do you think about this? Eric Roberts in Santa's Cousin.
I mean, when you think of Eric Roberts, do you think of Santa Claus?
These days, a little more than probably previously. Well, you know, his hair has gotten a little white. I could see you stick a beard on him. He wears glasses sometimes. He could be Santa Claus.
No, no.
Oh, you're down on the... How about Eliza as Mrs. Claus?
Well, I mean, I do like them together. Whenever they're together, that's kind of fun to me. But no, I just... It's not about even the visuals, Doug, because visually, I don't care about that. It's the vibe, and I just don't feel like Eric gives off Santa Claus vibes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Chad, what do you think? You going to check out Santa's Cousin from the year 2024?
In Eric Roberts' defense, I will say that I can see him as Santa more than Judd Nelson, who actually played Santa in some movie I saw years ago. I don't know if I'd watch it. But
Chad, are you down on Judd Nelson?
Kind of.
Oh, well, I guess this is just an issue that we're just never going to be able to tackle entirely. But what we will be able to tackle is Santa's Cousin, which Liam and I both have to watch. And why is that, Liam?
Some dumb thing I agreed to under false pretenses.
We made a blood oath to watch the life and work of actor Eric Roberts, and that includes 2021's Master, the Doctor Who audio play serial, which we're going to talk about right after this.
Looming through the flames with his serpent's eyes and cruel smile, the haunter of my dreams approaches, as I knew he always would.
My poor dear child, you really should never have meddled with things you don't understand.
From Big Finish Productions, Master.
It seems we experienced some kind of temporal distortion on our test run.
You mean you affected time?
I want to show you something.
What?
Everything.
God, something's coming through!
I'm here. Well, this place hasn't seen visitors in a while.
If I were her, I'd be ready to kill.
I wish you to receive us as friends. I can only imagine how you treat your enemies.
I have no enemies, Chancellor. No one would be stupid enough to make an enemy of me.
A compact flyer is taking off with two.
Abandoned in the vortex, the Master's lost incarnation is about to be thrown a lifeline. Earth rebuilds in the aftermath of invasion, and power rests with those who innovate. Genius Lila Krieg makes a deal with the devil to see her dreams fulfilled. As the Master returns, there are those, like Vienna Salvatore, who wish to hunt him, and those upon whom he wishes vengeance against. It's Master from the year 2021 from Big Finish Productions, an audio play box set featuring Eric Roberts as the Doctor Who villain, The Master, who he first played in the rather loathed 1996 TV movie. And just as Big Finish have revived other previously unpopular eras of Doctor Who, including the Eighth Doctor played by Paul McGann from that same TV movie, Eric has returned, and this has just been over the last couple of years. It's actually been since this box set that we're going to be talking about today, two more box sets, including one released just in the past month, which we'll get to a little bit later. Eric returned to the role of the Master for the first time for Big Finish back in 2019 with the release of the Diary of River Song Series 5, and he's had small parts in kind of Master-centric audio plays since then, but this marked the first time he took center stage as the character in 25 years, and the box set includes three stories which interlink. They are Faustian, Prey, and Vengeance. And yeah, we have Eric Roberts as the voice of the Master. Chase Masterson is here, who for me is recognizable from Deep Space Nine, but has done a lot of other stuff as well, as Vienna Salvatore. Laura Aikman is Lila Krieg. We have some very talented voice actors here as well who are not as familiar for me. But this was my first experience with a Big Finish production. It's something I've always meant to dip my toes into a little bit. I've always been very curious about it. But as I said earlier, Doctor Who is one of those things where I feel like I have to be a completist about it. And there's just so much. Like, if you dive in, even outside of the serials, and you get into the books, and of course, the larger cultural aspects and the movies and all that sort of thing, it can really be very overwhelming. And I've just never taken the time to at least even just start at like the 2000s Doctor Who and go forward from then. But maybe this will give me the push I need. Let us start with our guest today. Chad, you probably have a better understanding of, well, certainly of Doctor Who generally, but even these Big Finish productions. Have you listened to any of these before?
Yeah, I have. I've been a fan. And I should say that it is overwhelming. I consider myself very familiar with Doctor Who, but there's stuff like the New Adventures novels that I've actually never read.
Sure.
So I have a friend who's kind of in the same boat where he has to listen to it from the very beginning, but Doctor Who plays it very loose with the continuity.
Right.
More so than other big franchises, so it's not as big a deal. Although I will say that the Big Finish stuff, and this is kind of unique among franchises because usually this stuff is treated as a side thing, but the TV show itself has acknowledged that Big Finish is kind of canonical, although I guess it's more of a case-by-case basis, because sure, there was like a whole thing where Dave Doctor talked about characters he traveled with in Big Finish. So, but, you know, you're dealing with a franchise that has alternate timelines, futures that never happen, stuff like that. So it's like, it's built in its own protection. But yeah, I've been into Big Finish. I especially enjoy the Master stories because One of my best friends is like, fantasizes about being Superman or has like a connection with Superman, whereas I have a connection with the Master, which is probably very disturbing, and I should probably report myself to the nearest psychiatric hospital.
I can't even speak to how disturbing that is or isn't because I don't know enough about the Master, but I'll ask you about that in just a second. Before we get into any of that, what did you think of listening to that? What? How did these stories, how do they fit into the continuity? Let's not worry about that. But in terms of just their quality and how much you enjoyed them, what did you think of The Master?
Well, I've long thought that we should hand the actual Doctor Who show over to the people at Big Finish. I think they're... I mean, it's a little different because they're obviously playing to a larger audience, but I think for the most part, and there are some stories that aren't so good at this, but I think they do a very good job of catering to an adult audience while at the same time avoiding grimdark and Zack Snyderization. And I think this serial was a good example of that because I actually listened to it before, soon after it first came out, and I enjoyed it then, and I enjoy it more now, and I think it's fairly, I think it's a good example of the quality that Big Finish brings into what they do, and the fact that, you know, it's by the fans, so, but I think they still do a good job of avoiding dumping a lot of continuity on you, even though they're kind of maybe celebrated or notorious for doing entire shows that basically just exist to fix continuity holes in the main series and things like that, or even continuity holes within their own continuity. So, but I mean, but there's not a bad here.
Their audience has to be, for the most part, diehards anyway. So you can see why they would be catered to a little bit with it. I have to say, I did not find that there was much of a barrier for entry of this particular series. I mean, I know that there are references to things in the larger chronology and the canon of Doctor Who that are referenced here, but I never felt like I don't understand what's going on or who these characters are. And of course, some of the characters, like Chase Masterson's character, it only exists within the continuity of these Big Finish productions already. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you can see how it kind of feeds on itself a little bit. So I want to go over to someone who would be less familiar even than myself regarding that. Liam, what did you think of listening to The Master?
You know, I thought it was pretty fun. I think, it's interesting because I am very unfamiliar with like audio plays, though I guess that's not entirely true because I've listened to some like actual play D&D podcasts, sure, which is somewhat similar. But this is obviously different in that it's very scripted. And anyway, so that was a new experience. And then Doctor Who, you know, I have a vague idea of what it is, but this is very much its own thing, right? So I went in a little skeptical. If we break this down by episode, I really love the first episode. I thought the slow sort of seduction, really, of this scientist, you know, convincing her to be the conduit by which the Master enters the world. I really liked that. Second episode was good, but I don't know. For some reason, I just found myself a little less interested in, though I thought when they were in the sewers and there was the monsters in the sewers, that was pretty cool.
Sure.
And I enjoyed that. And then the final episode, so I mentioned this a little bit to you guys, but there's not a lot I remember about when I used to watch Doctor Who when I was a kid, you know, things here and there, the theme song, the scarf, but the thing that I just feel like people know who don't even know Doctor Who has got to be the Daleks, right? Like, I hear that fucking voice. And the thing that always messes me up about the Daleks is that they are like soulless robot things, I guess. I don't really know much of their backstory, but they seem like robots. But their voice also sounds kind of weirdly emotional, you sure know, when they're just like, oh, bye. And I'm like, oh, they seem upset. Why are the robots upset? It just, everything about it, like, is unsettling to me. So having them not only play like how do I want to describe this? Like a villain, but like an other villain. Like the Master's kind of the villain, but they come in as another force. I like that. But I particularly like when the Master, as played by Eric Roberts, is fucking up Daleks. Just fucking with great joy and fulfillment, destroying Daleks. Because my only experience of them, right, is as these near invincible killing machines, right?
Sure.
Whatever Doctor Who narrative where suddenly you could survive Daleks. I'd missed all that. And probably there was more nuance when I was a kid. I just remember seeing them and being like, those suck. I'm frightened. This is scary. And so hearing those same noises, but then Eric Roberts just taking great campy pleasure, chewing the audio scenery to let us know that he's destroying these things. I don't know. Something about that made me real happy. I don't even know what it was that it touched in my mind that made me be like, this is so cool. I really liked it. It made me like the thing overall as a whole. I do wonder if I was, I mean, Chad, you seem into it, so maybe not. But I wonder if there are Doctor Who heads for whom this doesn't really work, because it's like a character who is in a it's a version of the Master that not everybody loves because a lot of people don't like that movie. It's not connected to the main sort of continuity, although again, with a continuity that's as messy as Doctor Who, I don't know that it matters. I just found myself thinking when it was over, does this appeal to people who are maybe a bit more invested? Because for me, my investment was just Eric Roberts, and I gotta tell you, Doug, we got a lot of fucking Eric Roberts in this thing.
Plays very much a background role in the first of the three stories, because he's like trying to seduce this main character. And I'm like, well, is that how he's going to be? Is he going to be able to take center stage? And then he does take center stage in the following two, particularly in the last one. And he's very much like a central part of what's going on. And I, you know, it's you, because we're so focused on Eric Roberts, because of this being a podcast devoted to him, you start to wonder, it's like, is he fitting in? Like, does he feel like he's part of this universe? Does it work? And we'll get to talk about his performance in just a little bit. But I felt very similarly to you, Liam. I felt a little giddy sometimes listening to it because I was enjoying it so much.
I agree.
But the production value on it is so high, where you really, because when I listen to like audio plays, my history with it is mostly kind of like old school radio plays, you know, like The Shadow and the Third Man and stuff like that. So this feels like a modern version of that, except cranked up to 11 a little bit. It basically sometimes sounds like the soundtrack of a movie or a television show that you're watching, and it's done extremely well. And there's obviously a very professional, it's very slick how they put it together. It is notable, by the way, and one of the things I really like about this series, and I don't know if this is the case, you can correct me on this, Chad, that at the end of each episode, they do a little behind the scenes thing where they interview some of the people involved and the writers and things like that. And they pull back the curtains a little bit. It reminded me a little bit of those full moon video zones. Is this a common thing? Is this something that happens on all of the releases from Big Finish?
Yeah, as far as I know, they do it for every single episode.
I have a big question for you, though, Chad, and maybe this is also could be helpful to our listeners. The Master. I don't think I watched up to the point where the Master was introduced. I know about him as a villain in the Doctor Who canon, and the fact that there's a number of different actors who've played the Master. I guess I have two questions. One, how do you see Eric Roberts' performance in the initial television series and the fact that it wasn't well-liked? Can you explain a little bit about why that is and how this tries to correct that a little bit?
Sure, and I guess this kind of goes along with Liam's question, too, is, well, the attitude toward, to be honest, I guess I can't really speak to it that well because I try to avoid the fandom, I think a lot of people do, but my sense is that it's not like, say, something like the Star Wars prequels, or, well, the Star Wars sequel trilogy, for that matter, where it's something that's really hotly debated or widely despised. It's the movie, because when they first brought the show back, there was a big question about whether or not the movie would even be considered canon.
Sure, absolutely.
So when it actually was officially acknowledged, Paul McGann's Doctor, at least, it was like kind of a big deal. And I think since then, the fandom's attitude toward the movie has softened a bit, and that's partially because of Big Finish, because they did a whole series with Paul McGann's Doctor, and he proved very successful and very well liked, and I think that's extended over to the Eric Roberts Master as well. And I think maybe there's been, to a certain degree, a reevaluation of the movie, or at least an acceptance of it.
Sure.
As for Eric Roberts as the Master himself, I think actually fans do like him. He's He probably won't make it into many people's favorites list, but I don't think that there's really a rejection of him as the Master as you would get in some franchises of with certain characters, like, you know, the famous Scrappy-Doo. He's not viewed as, like, the Scrappy-Doo of Doctor Who by any means.
I mean, it must be difficult, right, for fans, because not only was he the Master in a TV movie that people generally didn't like anyway, but he's also American, right? I mean, that has to be a double whammy against him to a certain extent.
Oh, and it's funny you brought that up, because actually not too long ago I listened to another Doctor Who where the Masters get together, and to give you an idea of how messed up the continuity is, there actually is a story where all the Masters team up and they ensure their own resurrection for the new series. and there's like a comment about how they're going to have to push the Eric Roberts Master back into the time vortex just to prevent them from screwing up their own timeline any further. This is why I love the franchise, but that kind of story is why I love it. But in that story, Missy, the female Master, who's played brilliantly, of course, she's one of my favorites. She actually makes fun of Eric Roberts' American accent.
Oh.
it's a great clip. I'll see if I can find it somewhere after we finish recording. But I think that there's been a big acceptance. And speaking from my personal perspective, there really aren't any Masters I dislike. I kind of feel the same way about the Doctors. I think it's a fascinating part because it's been portrayed fairly consistently over the decades and over the course of many different actors, but at the same time they bring their own interpretation to it, and in many ways they're reacting to what the previous actor who interpreted the Master has done. And I think Eric Roberts deliberately, and I think he said this in interviews, and I think he kind of brings it up again during the cast interviews for this episode, is that he wanted to have a less campy and more masculine Master after the Ainley interpretation at the end of the classic series of Doctor Who. And I think he succeeds. I see his Master as being, like, instead of like a kind of a super villain like the Master before him, or a James Bond villain like the Roger Delgado Master, who was, of course, the first Master, I see him, he's kind of playing the Master as kind of a thug, a con artist. And I think that's very deliberate. And I think that's a very interesting and valid interpretation of the character.
I think some of the writers in the behind the scenes material, they're talking about it, that he's the most desperate version of the Master, right? Because, and that's it, you know, he plays it with this ultimate confidence that he is the Master of all, while also being like, as soon as he shows vulnerability because he's about to be sent back to the void or whatever, you can, you know, the fear comes out in his voice. I think it's a really interesting portrayal. I did want to ask you about the way that these three parts are structured, where they introduce this Lila Creed character, who is basically the Master's companion for these three stories, even though she is a hesitant companion, to say the very least. Is this something that they often set up with Master stories, maybe on Big Finish productions that you've heard, that they have a companion for those listeners who, I don't know, again, a ton about Doctor Who, but the companions are a very essential part of Doctor Who stories, where the Doctor has usually a human or someone else or a series of them who are going along for the ride and allow for, you know, different perspectives on what's going on, to ask a lot of questions. He has a companion here. Do they usually set that up, or is that kind of unique to this series?
No, I think it's a usual approach. It's definitely the way they usually handle the Derek Jacobi stories. I think the majority of them have an outside character who encounters the Master and basically ends up having their life destroyed by them. At least that's true for the Jacobi stories, which literally follow the template of you have a basic sci-fi or adventure story playing out and the good guys are destined to win, but then Derek Jacobi's Master shows up and does horrible things to a lot of people and gets away with it completely, so those series are fun. But I think the Eric Roberts Master stories are different from that, because you do have a protagonist, and that's the way the other serials with Eric Roberts' Master will go, is that they set him up against, shoot, I can't believe I forgot her name, Vienna, it's such a unique name, and I completely blanked on it for a second.
This is the Chase Master, she plays like an intergalactic bounty hunter type assassin character, with a conscience.
Yeah, and I can see why they reused her, because it's definitely interesting to see the Master up against, I mean, I think the Doctor tends to be, I think the one of my biggest complaints about the new series, especially the way he was written at the beginning, is like, they wrote him as kind of an American superhero, and the Doctor really isn't. He's an alien, and he should have like a complex morality. One
that, do you mean the current series that's airing, or do you mean from the like how, what are you,
oh, the current series? Yeah, but they changed that. Eventually the Doctor became more gray. I think I like a little gray in my Doctor, and I think that suits the character best, because I talked about this on social media, but the Doctor has like, even though he's supposed to be a pacifist non-violent superhero, he has like a body count that in the millions, which is
who's the Doctor, like, and who's the Master here?
Yeah, exactly. I think also in an interview they were talking with Gomez, who played Missy, and she said that like the Doctor and the Master both kill people, it's just that the Master doesn't feel bad about it. which is disturbingly true.
One of the things,
but anyway,
sorry.
I was just going to say, but yeah, that's what I liked about this series, is that it sets the Master up against someone who has a very definite good morality, but she also has shades of gray to her. And I think I can see why they stuck with that formula for his stories.
I was actually a little surprised that the Lila Cree character doesn't appear to come back in the two fall. Anyway, we'll get to those when we cover those well into the future. I want to go back over to you for a second, Liam. I was just talking about before how I was made a little giddy listening to it. Part of that is just like the production quality generally. I just think it's so well done. And one of the things that's revealed in the behind the scenes little sections of these recordings is that it was all recorded during lockdown. Or I should say the Eric Roberts and I think Chase Masterson parts were recorded in early 2020 before lockdown. But then like all the rest of it is done during lockdown. Could you hear that while you were, you might not even be aware of this because I know that you didn't listen to the behind the scenes thing because you're not that kind of person.
No, definitely not.
But was there anything odd about the audio that made you maybe suspect something like that? Or did it all feel pretty coherent to you?
It all felt very coherent to me. I wouldn't have assumed that they weren't in some way working together. The only thing I noticed, and I would kind of like your take on it. I'm trying to find the name. Was her assistant at the beginning, Eddie? Was that the name of the character?
Eddie, that's right.
What did you think of the Glenn MacReady performance?
Look, he's not American, okay? So the fact that he decided to play American, he actually does a couple other voices in the background throughout as well, including, like, there's little bits of Leela's father and like in her brain and her dreams, and he plays that as well with his natural accent. Yeah, his American accent is not great. But then again, this does take place well into the future. You can kind of explain it away if you really wanted to.
It was the only part that was distracting for me, and I didn't even, Doug, realize it was his accent. It's just he didn't sound natural, I guess, when it is. And it made me think of, weirdly, this is maybe just my thing, it made me think of video games that I've played where the voice actors in the video game are like not sure what they're doing, and you're just sitting there being I don't know what's happening right now. And it felt, because I really felt like Laura Aikman, is that right? Who played Lila. I thought she was really good and very, and again,
she's terrific.
For me, in an audio drama, it's somehow being, you know, doing the dramatic thing, but also feeling very natural. And so, like, when she's in a scene with Eddie, you know, Glenn MacReady, he feels like he's like putting on a thing. Like, it just didn't feel, I don't know, something about it just hit me weird. And maybe it was the accent. I just was listening to it going, what is up with this dude? Like, it just didn't quite work for me. You know?
Interesting. Chad, you had something to say about that?
Oh, I was just going to say, and another thing I really like about the Big Finish stuff is, like, they handle the limitations of the medium really well. You can catch it occasionally where a character will describe something that's happening in a way that isn't quite natural.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't happen as often as you would think it does. So
it's old hat for them at this point, so I think they can handle it very intelligently. I did notice it a few times myself, but I appreciated it, right? I mean, it is kind of very old school. Just this entire medium of doing it as an audio play is so old fashioned in some ways that it was actually really fun. It felt like a kind of a throwback to sit back. You know how I listened to this? I played the Power Washer video game. I played that and I had it on in the background just to relax my mind. And I did. I found it very, very relaxing. You know, Liam has already told us kind of how he ranked his enjoyment of the stories. How about you, Chad? Of the three, what was your favorite?
Actually, I would say, I think the first one is my favorite. I did appreciate the second one maybe a bit more, but I don't know. I kind of found the second and third to be so interconnected that that it's hard for me to rate them separately. But I did think the first one was best. But I kind of dig the idea of the Master as this Mephistopheles figure, you know.
I liked how on the second story, Prey, that the Master is back on his heels a little bit because he's threatened. You know, they end up crash landing in sort of a dystopian gang ruled. I mean, the writer said that he was explicitly inspired by Escape from New York, where they have to deal with these kind of gang leaders and things like that. I thought that was really interesting, but I have to say, like Liam, it's when the Master is like, he gets his groove back and he's like, he's kicking ass. Even when he may be more vulnerable than he lets on, that's when I really took to him, because I think Eric Roberts plays kind of smarmy, overconfident asshole pretty well. Actually, very, very well. And I think that he really kind of comes into his own with the character a little bit. I love how in the Faustian story, they present him very seriously. I mean, he jokes around a little bit, like he appears as the bartender at one point during it. But like it's almost a little bit like, you know what it reminded me of? I'm a little embarrassed. Of A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, the way that he's trying to kind of get into her head a little bit and trying to provoke, but he has this menace while a little bit of an edge of humor to it. And I just really like that they were committed to giving this character his edge back, and then as the series progresses, he gets to be, he's not a joking character, he's not a comedic character, but he's able to be funny and charismatic, and I think that really comes through in a surprising way. I didn't know really what to expect with it. And I was really pleasantly surprised by it.
One of my favorite bits is actually from that second part, where he's obviously willing to throw Lila under the bus to save his own skin when he's negotiating with King. And then when she brings it up later, he just shrugs it off. Like that was a great moment, and I like the way Eric played it. Like, how can you even doubt me? Even though,
I love that part as well. I do. This is the one thing I wanted to ask before we start talking about Eric Roberts' performance specifically. One of the things about this story is that it's great. It brings back the Master, but at the end, it kind of puts him back in the box again. I think the idea is if this there was never going to be a follow-up, they didn't know for sure that there was going to be. If the contracts couldn't work out, then you have a self-contained thing and you don't have to worry about it. Is that how a lot of these work, where they try to reset things by the end of the stories? Or does it kind of depend on whether Big Finish seems to know whether they have more stories that they're going to be able to tell with these characters?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's kind of a case-by-case thing. But yeah, there's definite limits to what they can do, especially because they're usually working with characters in media race. Right. Like, there's a definite end to what's going to happen to Eric Roberts' Master. And it actually got established in a Big Finish audio that he has to be at the point of death, and then the other himself and his other selves bring him back from the brink. We know what's going to happen to Derek Jacobi's Master. So, I mean, but yeah, it's easy. But I think even within that, they have a way of playing around with continuity a bit. So it doesn't really get in the way of my enjoyment of the stories. Like, for the most part, I just think I'm really happy that these characters who only got maybe one movie in the Eric Roberts Master case, or in the case of Derek Jacobi's Master, only maybe, I think, 15 minutes of screen time. That they're actually getting entire stories that flesh them out and give them their own adventures.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And of course, we wouldn't have this whole series without an attempt to kind of not only to revive and to reinvigorate maybe some less enjoyed things in the series, but also that there was enough interest in the fandom generally to allow for that, to allow enough interest not only for this box set, but for two ones that follow it up. Let us talk about Eric Roberts' performance. We've been dancing around it a little bit. Like I said, coming into this, it's not like we haven't heard Eric Roberts do voice work before, for better or for worse. He's done cartoon work, like we saw him on Justice League playing Mongol in that adaptation of the Alan Moore story. He did a great job there. On the other side, we have a talking cat where it's memorably terrible, right? So I didn't know what was, I was wondering if he was going to stand out like a sore thumb or if he was going to be able to integrate. I probably should have had more confidence in the folks at Big Finish, but I didn't have a lot of experience with it. I'm going to start with you, Liam. What did you think of Eric Roberts as the Master in The Master?
Great. Loved it. It's so good. Okay, side note. I think we sort of said this, but because I don't know much about The Master, that's not my measure. My measure is, am I getting that good Eric Roberts?
Sure.
And I think I am. I think I'm getting, he's slimy. He is quick to betray those around him.
Yeah.
And for me, like, I liked seeing him kind of a little bit on the defensive in the second episode. Mm-hmm. But the reveal that, like, maybe this whole thing, like, clearly he wants to control the whole Earth, right? But a lot of the things he has going in the third episode make you think, do you really want to control the Earth? Or was this whole thing about fucking up Daleks from the beginning? That maybe you just thought, you know, if I, you know, post up here long enough, those guys are going to come back and I'm going to get to kill some Daleks. It kind of feels like maybe that was even more important to him than running the planet. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I got to say, I like that. I like that a lot. I like this portrayal of it. I liked whatever. I do think maybe on a longer sort of timeline of this character, it might get a little annoying in that it could be a bit one note. You know what I mean? Like, you just know who he is and what he's going to do, right? And maybe a character that was a bit more opaque or surprising. Like, I was trying to imagine if this was part of a longer series, would I like it as much? I don't know. As much as I love Eric Roberts' performance of the character, this version of the character doesn't feel like there's a lot of surprises in store. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel like I know what he's going to do or I know what he's about. So maybe that's a bit of a negative, but I think his portrayal of it, I really appreciated a lot. And it reminded me of other roles we've seen him in where he can just turn on this button and suddenly he's very menacing and slimy, you know?
Sure. Absolutely. I do think that part of that limitation that you're talking about also comes from the idea that this character, this iteration of the Master, has sort of a beginning and end that's already set, right? So it's like there can be danger for him, but there's never going to be so much of a danger that it's going to screw up how his end happens, how the transition happens to the next actor who plays the Master and things like that. But I guess thankfully with his character specifically, because so little happened with him since it was just that one TV movie, you can explore it probably even more than you can with some of the other actors who have played the Master that they've done work with. I mean, I think he does a great job. I think he's very, very believable in this universe. I think the fact that he's not directly, you know, acting with some of these actors that he's having a lot of conversations with, it's really amazing. It's amazing what you can do when you're not David Dakota in your Eric Roberts bathroom trying to record these things in an hour. What you can do with committed performers and committed directors and people who are really willing to get it right. His voice gets a little slurry sometimes. It's part of the Eric Roberts charm at this point. But he just has a command and a charisma that I wasn't sure was going to come through, but I think it comes through really strongly. But we're coming at it from the perspective of neophytes. Chad, what did you think of Eric Roberts as the Master?
Oh, I think he does really well. I think I said it before explicitly, but I mean, he's not one of my favorite Masters, but I think he's definitely a very good one. And I think, because he's said this before, but he knew almost nothing about Doctor Who before he accepted the role for the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if he's really explored it since.
I got the impression from the interviews afterwards, it's just like, yeah, I love that he's an evil character. It's like, you don't know anything about this. And that's great. I mean, that's perfect, right? That's totally fine. Yeah, but that said, with continuity.
Right, exactly. But yeah, that said, I think he understands the character very well. And I think that's true for every actor who has played the Master. And I guess you could say that there isn't much. I kind of disagree with that. I think the Master is a more complex character than than somebody might think. But I think even those nuances that Eric is picking up on them very well.
I'm curious to see where this character goes in the other two Big Finish box sets. Those are Master Nemesis Express, which was released in October of 2022, and Master Planet Doom from February 2024. Both of those feature Chase Masterson returning, as well as that final one, Nemesis Express, also having Paul McGann. So I'm very curious about that. And I do wonder if this is going to lead to more interactions with Eric Roberts' version of the Master and Doctors Who. That is one of the interesting things about this, and I think it was a surprise to you, right, Liam, that there is no Doctor in this story whatsoever. And I thought that was really refreshing as well. I thought it was just going to be, oh, all of these Big Finish productions still connect very directly with that. It really feels in very directly like a story in that universe that could very well, you know, not involve Doctor Who in any way, shape, or form outside of, you know, references that occur through it. But yeah, I think Eric Roberts is terrific as the Master. But the big question before we finish up today, is Eric Roberts the fucking man in 2021's The Master? Starting with our guest today, Chad Denton. Chad, is he the fucking man?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Okay, I like that. How about fuck yeah? Oh boy. Liam, let's finish up. Is Eric Roberts the fucking man in Master, yes or no?
100%.
And I think we'll all agree here. Eric Roberts is the fucking man once again, bringing this character of the Master back to life. I'm glad that it continues. I'm glad that that relationship seems strong. And when it comes to Eric Roberts' vocal performances, this is right up there with some of the best. And I, you know what? I think the big testament to how much I enjoyed this is I'm excited to check out these other ones. And not only just those. Though I've said before that I'm kind of a completist and I want to start at the beginning, this feels like a little corner of the Doctor Who universe that I can just explore on my own and not feel as tied to the larger Doctor Who world and canon. And that might be a fun place to explore before I really get into things and just lose like 6 months of my life just trying to watch every single episode. I mean, it's something I've always been meaning to do. As I like to tell everyone, it's on the pile, and that pile is an endless pile that I forget about all the time. Chad, thank you so much for coming onto this program, showering us with your Doctor Who knowledge. I've always obviously been a big fan of you as a human being. I know that you're a very talented writer, and I know that you're a very talented person generally. Where can people find you, and where can people find your work?
Well, I'm applying to jobs, so currently my Twitter is on lockdown, but eventually you'll be able to find me. Yeah. But especially with current events going on and my opinion on this. But you can find me on Twitter eventually as Reluctantly Chad. Also, I run a podcast, a history narrative podcast called Medici Podcast. And also, I do another podcast called Pre-Stonewall, which looks at LGBTQ figures from before the Stonewall riots. That podcast has just gotten started, so I'm still like working out how I want to present it. But you can check that out as well.
Well, of course, put links to all of those in the show notes today. But really, Chad, thank you so much. I've been wanting to have you on the podcast for a long time. And when I knew that I was getting closer to this Doctor Who themed episode, I knew two things. A, that Liam was going to be pissed when I told him to listen to it, and B, that I needed to have Chad on to explain Doctor Who to me, and you've done very well. Unfortunately, the first part didn't pan out. Liam, it seems like you enjoyed yourself somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I was a little frustrated only in that I'm not used to being a critic of audio drama.
Yes.
But it was so fun and good. I don't care. It's great. Like, I'm not suggesting they're all going to be good, but knowing that this is a possibility, I'm more excited to check out other ones because if they can be this good, then I definitely want to hear more, you know?
Well, I guess we'll find out in the future because of Liam. We have to listen to those other two Master ones because we have a blood oath to cover the life and work of actor Eric Roberts. But if people would just want to check out us talking about Eric Roberts or other wonderful podcasts, what's the best way for them to do so?
Well, folks can head to cinepunks.com, that's CINEPUNX, if they want the latest episodes of this podcast, as well as a whole other family of podcasts, really, whether that's the flagship show Cinepunks or friends of the show like Tomb of Ideas or Twitch of the Death Nerve or Horror Business, bunch of shows over there. If they want to dive into our archive, Doug, they should head to cinemasmorgasbord.com, where not only will you find all of our episodes, you can organize those episodes by topic and decide which ones you're interested in exploring.
You can definitely do that. And if you are enjoying what you're hearing right now, why don't you leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice? Or even better, why don't you tell a friend who loves Eric Roberts? They've always been wondering when they can listen to an Eric Roberts-related podcast. Well, they can now and have been able to for a long time. You go over to cinemasmorgasbord.com or on Twitter at cinemasmorg, S-M-O-R-G. You can follow me, Doug Tilley. I'm over on Blue Sky because I was banned from Twitter for all time. But I'm over there. Just do a search for Doug Tilley. That's T-I-L-L-E-Y. But for now, we need to take a little break. We're going to be back very soon with another Eric Roberts classic. Good night, everyone.
Night, night.
Good night.
Hey, Doctor Who, Doctor Who. Hey, the TARDIS, Doctor Who. Hey, Doctor Who, Doctor Who.